From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, sorry, it's an all-Sharon show.
Sharon, I haven't left town yet.
I know, but I've got to start getting used to doing this without you. So today I'll check out a new book of Indiana road trips, then get a preview of the upcoming Actors Theater of Indiana season, and finally, one of your favorites, check in on this year's Indy Irish Fest, and we'll have that arts calendar we call.
What do we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. U.S. history and English teacher Andrea Neal has observed generations of students who live in the heart of the Hoosier State but don't know very much about its history and culture. To celebrate the state's bicentennial, she decided to write Road Trip, a Pocket History of Indiana. It contains 100 historical essays, each one with a twist. Each essay on Indiana events and figures has a destination attached, either a marker or a monument, museum, park, or annual event that Hoosiers could attend or visit to make history come alive. Sharon Gamble invited Andrea to tell us more about this fun and informative book.
So I like authors to read a little bit from their works, but frame for us a little bit what you're going to read.
Okay. The book starts with the Ice Age, and I end with the Bicentennial itself, and I tell the story about the Bicentennial Nature Trust in general, and in particular, Meltzer Woods, which is a wonderful tract of undisturbed old-growth forest adjacent to a farm. And the farmer who owns the land sold it at a very below-market price to be preserved in perpetuity and to be sure that the timber is not torn down by the lumber industry.
Fantastic.
It has taken the better part of our statehood to decide that preservation matters. Our history, after all, is found not just in books and museums, but in the world around us. It is in the coal and limestone beneath our feet. It is in the corn growing in our fields. It is in the canals, railroad tracks, and roads that moved us from one part of the state to another as Indiana grew from pioneer past into modernity. It is in the rivers that flow beside us and the trees that tower above us. And thanks to the Bicentennial Trust and a Hoosier family's foresight, it is also due west of Milroy in a place called Meltzer Woods.
Fantastic. I love the scope of this book, and it's a tidy book. It's not like a tome that if you dropped it on your foot, you'd break your toes. It's perfectly sized to put in the map pocket in your car, which is where mine lives.
Great.
And it starts, as you say, you bracket it with prehistory and go to now. Tell me what inspired you to write this book.
I actually began this process in 2013, and as a history teacher, I love using anniversaries to teach stories and to really celebrate some of the heroic moments of our past. And in the summer of 2013, I thought, I would like to be the bicentennial columnist. And if I start now, maybe I'll beat everybody else to the punch. And so I actually started writing these stories as newspaper columns that have been distributed free to Indiana newspapers ever since. And I approached the Historical Society at one point in the process and said, I'm writing 100 stories about Indiana. Do you think they could be put together in a book at some point? And to my great delight, they agreed. But I wanted to really boil down our history into bite-sized stories that newspaper readers of all ages could enjoy.
And you also, where did the idea of, and let's go look at things as well, not just read about them, not just have a cerebral relationship to them, but let's have a visceral relationship
to them. Right, that came from my experience as a teacher as well. students benefit from field trips. Great tragedy of our time is that most schools have cut these field trip budgets and students aren't able to enjoy them anymore. But when I take a class on a field trip, I say, touch the banister. That's the banister Benjamin Harrison touched.
Wow.
Or look at the ground beneath your feet. Slaves on the Underground Railroad walked there. Or if we go to the Tippecanoe battlefield, I say, right here, great leaders of the past, both from the Tecumseh Confederacy and William Henry Harrison's troops, shed their blood. And that really brings it alive for students. And I thought, why not do that for the readers of this series? And so I decided to only tell stories that had a destination attached. And I tried to avoid historic markers, although in a few instances I had to settle for markers. For example, the Women's Rights Convention in Dublin. It had to be in the book, but the only thing that stands is a marker. However, you can go and still say, this is where the women met and discussed the right to vote.
There's something sacred about a place still.
Indeed there is. It's funny, I was teaching the Magna Carta today in school, and I said, on my bucket list is to go to Runnymede, where the nobles met with King John and signed it. I just want to see that place.
Do your kids get this?
Oh, I think they do. They love field trips. And
that's so encouraging, because your students are young enough that they've never not known the computer age. They sort of came out of the womb texting, right?
Right. You're right. One of the things I've found helpful is we learn about it in class, and then we go and see it. And if they know the background first, they're much more apt to appreciate the place, kind of like preparing to go to the symphony by listening to the music beforehand. Mm-hmm. Once you know it, you're more apt to want to claim it as your own and invest in it.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever, when you go on field trips, do your kids ever teach, I say kids, that's a little informal, your students, do they ever teach you anything?
Well, most of the time they'll find something that I know nothing about and ask me about it, and I don't know the answer. And that's okay, too, because we'll go back and we'll look it up. I've tried to outwit them, though. I tend to go do reconnaissance before I go anywhere with students, because I do want to be prepared. I don't want anything left to chance. But sure, and also they'll be intrigued by things. They'll find modern-day application that I might not expect. They might see, when we talk about radical abolitionists and radical Republicans at the time of the Civil War, they might see a connection with Black Lives Matter, and I would never see that connection.
Mm-hmm. Education, two-way street, always has been, always will be.
Mm-hmm.
Are you from Indiana?
I am. Hoosier, born and bred.
And but my sense is, even as a teacher of history and language, this book was a chance to think in a new way about our state?
Oh, I tell you what, I teach American history, and I'm teaching it differently now that I know Indiana history better. And here's why. Almost everything important that's happened in our country, we've been able to examine with a lens right in our own backyard. And let me just give you a couple of examples. One would be the canal era. We know that the Erie Canal was a major canal, and many people have read about it in textbooks, but do Hoosiers realize that at one point we had a functioning canal, the Wabash Erie, that was longer than the Erie Canal, and that for a better part of two decades transported goods and people and products to market? And that gives us a chance to understand the canal era, the Civil War. No better state than Indiana to study this difficult conflict between North and South, because we had people in Indiana who themselves didn't really support the aims of the war, and yet Indiana contributed the second highest percentage of military enlistees. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really good place to study the Civil War.
And
all
also,
wars,
we're right there at the crux of the North and the South.
Exactly.
And some families were divided.
Exactly. And in southern Indiana, we had Morgan's raid, and so we even had military action on our own soil. So I think that I've learned to see American history now through the Indiana lens, certainly looking at some of the warts in our history, such as the Klan. Indiana tells an important story in terms of the more modern Klan, not the Klan that arose out of the Civil War, but the 20th century Klan. There are many other examples. Indiana was the first state with a eugenics law. And today, of course, we're very embarrassed by the notion that you could improve the human race through sterilization and other practices. But happy to report that even though we were the first, we did not perform the most. California performed about 20,000 acts of eugenics, Indiana about 2,000. It wasn't until the 1970s that Governor Otis Bowen said, we need to get that law off the books, mm-hmm. even though it had not been practiced for decades. So, yeah, I've learned to see history in my backyard through in a whole new way. And I've also learned to love Indiana more than I ever realized. Indiana is not the state that it is often stereotyped to be. We're not a backwater.
No.
Well, we're not all conservatives. We've had some very progressive people and ideas emerge from Indiana. We are individualists. And so when you are a state with an individual ethic, I think you can come across as both conservative and progressive because that's what individuals do.
You know, that's everything you've just said makes a really good point about sometimes people use an anniversary as a chance to only be cheerleaders, to only celebrate. But you've managed a real accomplishment and tone in this book. It's not just yay feel good stories. Sometimes it's here is history, and we need to think more carefully about this part of our history. It's a conversation starter.
I learned that from the great Hoosier historian James Madison. I've heard him speak many times, and he always says, we don't need to embrace our warts, but we certainly need to acknowledge them and learn from them. And that's true of all states, all regional history, national history, et cetera. So of course, I have to talk about the fact that though Indiana was a free state, there was slavery practiced in several Indiana counties, and William Henry Harrison did support slavery, coming as he did out of a Virginia aristocratic family. But then there was Jonathan Jennings, the first governor, who didn't, and in fact defeated the pro-slavery factions in order to become that first governor. So, yeah, there are a lot of warts in our history, but whose history doesn't have those? And we in Indiana, when it comes to the slave question, we're a bundle of contradictions. And our 1851 Constitution was a bundle of contradictions. It would not allow the migration of blacks into the state, and yet it had some incredibly beautiful progressive language about right to education and freedom of conscience and freedom of religion.
I love your description of the constitutional element of how quick the writing of our Constitution was.
Oh, yes. They had lots of good documents to borrow from, and borrow heavily they did, but it was hot and they were in a hurry, and there weren't so many of them, and there weren't too many issues that they got caught up in debate. And for example, they very quickly were able to deal with the slavery issue because under the Northwest Ordinance, Indiana was not to have slavery, so they didn't have to belabor that point. And they knew they wanted a free education system. They also knew they wanted a right to firearms, much like our Second Amendment, and they did that quickly.
Sharon Gamble with Andrea Neal. Her new book is Road Trip, A Pocket History of Indiana. Learn more at the Indiana Historical Society's blog at indianahistory.org. IndianaHistory.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Actors Theater of Indiana has packed its new season with some classics, some recent Broadway hits, and lots of artistic challenges. Sharon Gamble invited co-founders Cynthia Collins and Judy Fitzgerald and Marketing and Development Director Kristen Merritt in to learn more.
All right, because we have three fabulous women in the room, I'm going to ask you each to say your name so we can associate your voice with your name. And tell me your favorite production of the season. Uh-oh. Long pause as they decide.
That's tough.
That's a tough one.
I have two.
Okay.
Go ahead, Judy.
So I'm Judy Fitzgerald, and I'll tell you, my favorite two shows... I'm messing
cheating.
Up. Excited for Cabaret this season, which I think will be really exciting because we'll have to figure out how to put that in our space. I think it's going to be really down and dirty and just very
It'll
exciting.
Be very intimate for sure.
Yes, yes. And it should have been you. I'm very excited about that because we're premiering it. And I doubt many people, unless you went to New York City and saw it on Broadway, have seen it. And it's just hilarious and madcap fun.
Fun.
Well, hi. I'm Kristen Merritt, and I'm Director of Marketing and Development. And, that's tough. I would say cabaret is my favorite. And I'd say because the music was sort of part of my childhood framework in terms of my parents loved it, saw it, both in a musical production, of course, we saw it. Thank you. And saw it... on film with Liza Minnelli. So I'm most excited about cabaret.
Fantastic.
Cynthia Collins, co-founder. I'm excited about cabaret as well. Not only because I'm in it, it's one of the shows I'm in this season, but it's an excellent show. And Kander and Ebb, the composer and lyricist, John Kander, Fred Ebb. It was originally directed by and choreographed by Bob Fosse. Of course, the movie had Liza Minnelli, which most people remember the movie with Liza Minnelli and Joel Grey. The stage version is very close to the movie, but a little different, which is always the way with stage and
sure.
then when they turn it into film.
Yeah.
But it's the story is so compelling still. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have pre-war Berlin. The Nazis are in existence. And so... You know, you have some trials and tribulations there, and along with a spectacular score. So, and like Judy said, it's really going to be great in that space. Our space is very, very intimate. So you're going to see the actors sweat and spit.
It'll be like you're in the Kit Kat Club with
exactly.
them.
That's
right?
exactly. That's hopefully that'll be the feeling.
So. I know we're going a little out of chronological order, but since all three of you mentioned cabaret, what is it like to work on a show that has had a production that sort of owns the imaginations of two or three generations that have been around since, and I'm thinking more of the film than the original stage production because the film was just so widely seen. I mean, how do you
mm-hmm.
keep Liza Minnelli and Joel Grey out of your heads, your cast's heads? Or do you?
Well, you know what? It's funny. It's a spectacular question. You also, along the lines of productions, you have the 1998 revival
mm-hmm.
with Alan Cumming and Natasha Richardson.
Right.
And that was pretty huge. And as a matter of fact, Alan Cumming just came back again last season to revive his role as the MC for Roundabout Theater. So there it was on Broadway again.
Right.
With a new, obviously Natasha Richardson unfortunately has passed away, so
right.
they had a new Sally Bowles. But, you know, every time you do a show, and it's like those older shows, it's like even with the Rodgers and Hammerstein shows and all those old... You know, those old ones, you have to just take on the character, you know, as an actor, as your, however your process is.
Yeah.
I can only speak for myself personally. I don't think of the other, I don't think about Liza Minnelli. I don't think about Natasha Richardson. Of course, I think about them, think about them as a, you know, they did the role.
Right.
But when I'm preparing, I try to stay away from that.
You're meeting her on your own
terms. I
try
to stay away from that because you don't know what the director's vision is going to be.
Right.
So you're working with the director, you're working with the choreographer, and they have their vision of the show as well. So you have to, that's all collaboration. So that's what I do. I just dive in and take the script, you know, at face value as I'm reading it, and the music, and I wrap myself around the character, you know, as myself, you know, mm-hmm. as like I said,
yeah.
as I
you
do
just
my
have
process.
To start fresh.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Yeah. You need to make it fresh. You need to not try to recreate something that's been done, because I find that that's when people can't express themselves and creativity hits a wall. you know, mm-hmm. because you're trying to redo something. And if you don't embrace, like Cindy said, what each of us bring to each character and mm-hmm. make it new and fresh, then you're stuck. And
it
so,
seems like there might yeah. almost be a risk of being a caricature if you
well,
if
you're exactly. And attention. There've been a lot.
You're
of,
imitating. Yeah. That's
of
all you're doing.
Like that, sure.
yeah. You're merely imitating then when you do that.
Yeah.
Speaking of history, a whole different era of history starts your season. Let's talk about Million Dollar Quartet. I'm so excited. I've never yeah. seen this, and I'm psyched
oh,
for your
gosh.
Production.
You're gonna love it. You're gonna love
Indiana
it.
Premiere. We're so excited about Million Dollar Quartet, and it was such a difficult journey finding these characters.
Casting.
Yeah, casting the show. We thought it would be so much easier, and it was a true nail-biter.
And explain who the characters are, and people will immediately tick through the actors they know in their heads
okay.
and go, oh, wow.
Right. Well, let's, okay, so here, what it is let me just give you a really quick synopsis. It's 1956 at Sun Studios in Memphis. This is a jam session at Sun Studios with Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins. They were dubbed that evening. Sam Phillips, the owner of the Million Dollar Quartet, the owner of Sun Studios, mm-hmm. dubbed them Million Dollar Quartet. Mm-hmm. So it's a jam session, and these guys really got together in December of 1956. Mm. Sam Phillips called them all together because they were all with Sun Records at one time or another. Sam Phillips is the man who got all these guys started in the business. And so they all get together and have a one-night jam session. And that session was recorded. So there's a recording of that session.
Wow.
Yeah. And
but it's never been released as
No, but he recorded yeah. it. Mm-hmm. Sam Phillips recorded it
wow.
in some
and,
studio.
Oh, that was foresight.
Right.
And, of course, he took photographs yeah. of right. the guys. Mm-hmm. And so there they are, just that one night. And they were never together again, all four of them. And really, the show is every song you can possibly think of. I mean, it was 56, so Elvis was at his height mm-hmm. of his movie making. He had gone to Hollywood already. He had started making these movies. He was getting really, really, he had been on the Ed Sullivan Show already, you know, singing Blue Suede Shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were all kind of making their own way. The show kind of shows them all kind of going. Sam started them all, but they all kind of start making their own way.
Yeah,
it goes into that a little bit. But every song you ever want to hear
it's
of
an
these
out
guys,
of your seat musical.
It
though.
Really by the end of the show.
Oh.
Yeah, by the end of the show, if you're not hopped up and
yeah.
and clapping
high
and high energy, we've done mm-hmm. something wrong.
So you knew long before you announced your season that this was you were going to do it if you could cast it.
That's right.
Right.
Yes. That's right.
How hard was casting it?
Well, we couldn't find. Believe it or not,
the hardest one was Elvis.
Presley.
Elvis, it was
right.
Elvis.
We thought we'd find that first. We're like, oh, Elvis. A ton of these
There's
guys have done
a ton of people
the...
who look like him, right. who study
A ton
him.
Of these guys have done
and
the
And you
show.
Guys, you know, among you, have a national network.
Oh,
look
at
all over the place.
Right. Exactly. So we're thinking, oh, great. Well, no. Wrong. You know.
And you don't want cruise ship Elvis. You want.
Right. Well, you don't want an Elvis imitator.
Right,
you don't
right,
want someone who's just imitating Elvis. You need that young, fresh sex appeal
right.
Elvis. So Cindy.
Yeah, we found, believe it or not, we found the Elvis here locally, like at the 12th hour.
It's Whoa. Amazing.
Which is
he walked in and it was like...
We couldn't... This kid walked in.
Right?
Adam Tran, he just did Hand of God
mm-hmm.
at Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Adam walks in.
Did you all look at him and go, well, maybe this could work?
Yeah, and then when he started playing and he sang the song and I was like, you're hired.
We were elated, needless
yeah.
to say. But
yes. He's great. He's a good guy.
He was like, I
really
just picked
talented.
Up and just learned this, the guitar. Like, I mean, it was,
wow.
We
yeah.
were blown away.
He's
wow.
true. Very, very quick.
Well, and these actors are triple threat, right? I mean, they act and sing and play instruments.
Right.
So
that's
right.
Triple threat. Yeah. Yes.
And then I'm guessing there's, you know, obviously the music is why people are going to come see this, but they're also
right.
going to hear sense a little bit about the personalities of these guys and the
absolutely.
Respect they had for one another. Maybe
yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Even
and
how
absolutely.
They
that's,
influenced one another a little
that's,
bit.
Yeah, you will. And you'll see that. You'll see a little...
they're all remarkable.
You'll see how they respected each other and sometimes didn't respect each other. That happened.
Mm-hmm.
You see how they all respected Sam Phillips for, you know, getting their start. You'll see
and
how
Jerry Lee is new.
Jerry
Lee
Lee's
is
the baby.
The
he's like new on the scene in '56, so he's just starting with Sun Records. So he's like the new upstart, and they're all kind of like, okay, kid, take it easy.
And his name is Taylor Gray.
That's Taylor Gray. He just came off one of the tours, and he's great. He's a good kid, and he's really very good. The Jerry Lee Lewis character in the show is outrageous. I mean, just as you thought Jerry Lee Lewis would be, he's absolutely over-the-top outrageous. So it's a lot of fun.
And outspoken. Carl Perkins. We got to talk about Carl.
We got Carl Perkins, Jeremy...
Sublevitz.
Sublevitz. Jeremy Sublevitz just picked him up this morning at the airport. He just finished two productions of this. So he's coming off of doing Carl Perkins at another theater, and he also did Johnny Cash at another theater in Hilton Head. So, yeah, he can do both those roles.
You're going to have a fascinating rehearsal process on this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I love it.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep.
Speaking of untold stories or stories that we should know more about, tell us about It Should Have Been You.
I'm going to hit Cindy for this one, too.
It Should Have Been You was on Broadway last season. It closed last August. Had a nice run. The composer, Barbara Anselmi, is a very good friend of mine. We grew up together. It was conceived by her as well. The story was conceived by Barbara. She got together with Brian Hardgrove, who is David Hyde Pierce's partner.
Mm-hmm.
She and Brian started writing it. And then David came in to direct it. This is from the very beginning. This, as you know, before you get to Broadway, you have quite a process ahead of you.
Quite a journey.
So they were working on this for, I'd say, about 7 years before it hit Broadway.
Wow.
And but they had played in some regional theaters before that.
And small cast?
It's a cast of 13.
Oh, not so small.
It's meeting, you know, small to Midland.
It's hilarious.
It plays like, and this is actually Judy, this is from Judy's statement when we saw it. She said it plays like a musical sitcom because Hyde Pierce directed it. So he played it like, you know, and it's written by his partner. So it's written fast. It's quick. It's never a dull moment. Mm-hmm. Things move into scenes, just glide into the other very quickly. It's rapid fire dialogue at times. I think the music's fantastic. The music really is, it's more contemporary, but with a bit of a flair of the old, of the old musical, because that's the way Barbara writes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Will and Grace meets Frasier.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And it's a very diverse. We also like because it's full of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Jewish family, Catholic family. Their kids are getting married. The one daughter. There's three different plots going on, actually, and it all has to do with diversity.
So it's like a normal family life.
Exactly.
But with some surprises. I guess that's normal family life.
But a few twists. Yeah, a few twists and turns along the way. A few surprises.
A fun and dysfunctional.
But it's fun. It's a fun show, and it has a fantastic message.
Sharon Gamble with Actors Theatre of Indiana's co-founders, Cynthia Collins and Judy Fitzgerald, and Marketing and Development Director, Kristen Merritt. They perform at the Studio Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel, and their season begins September 16th with Million Dollar Quartet. Get tickets and all the details at atistage.org. Again, atistage.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Guess what's this weekend?
Let's see.
Not Labor Day.
Labor Day was last weekend, so weekend after Labor Day, it must be Penrod.
It's Indiana's nicest day.
Yes. It's
celebrating one of those birthdays that ends in a zero, too. Woohoo.
Wow. And you're going to be out there.
I'm going to be out there sadly.
It's going to be a little
odd. But you'll be there in spirit.
I will be there in spirit.
I might have to wear a ponytail.
Oh, that'd be kind of fun. Love to see that. Well, it will be a lovely day. But Sharon, this is actually kind of, I think, our last calendar for that thing that we call
What'll we do?
No, what will you do?
I don't know, but I am pretty sure you're going to find occasions in everyday life to say what'll we do? Mm-hmm. You just have to train your wife to say it with you.
Or maybe I'll start with the cats.
Maybe the cats, yeah. Yeah, it will not be the same. It will not be. In case you're wondering, dear listeners, the program will continue, but it will be a completely different creature without Travis.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Yes.
But meanwhile, you don't want to be sad. You want to know about some things that are going on around and about our town. So actually, the Penrod Arts Fair is a fabulous place. A lot of people think of it as a place to go to buy art, which of course it is. Mm-hmm. But it's also a place where pretty much all of the performing arts and museums have booths, and you can stop by and pick up their season schedule. So
That's right.
Can plan your arts attack for the whole year by going to the Penrod Arts Fair.
And you can also preview a lot of the performing arts groups. I know that Dance Kaleidoscope and Indianapolis School of Ballet, as well as a number of the other ballet schools in town, are going to be performing out there throughout the day, and some great music, too.
And don't forget, you're on the grounds of the Indianapolis Museum of Art, so take advantage, go stroll the gardens, and go inside and see what's up. I don't know, you might get lucky and be able to play a game of miniature golf.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right? Yeah, that's right. It's pretty fun. I love the mini golf out there.
Especially the squirrel hole.
The squirrel hole's the best.
But there's other stuff going on, too. What else do you have?
Well, you know what? Thinking about moving forward this fall, Indianapolis City Ballet Evening with the Stars is coming back. It's going to be on November 12th at the Marat Theater, and it is always such a great night where they bring in some of the best ballet dancers from all over the world, some of the best companies. This year, they'll have a number of dancers from American Ballet Theater, New York City Ballet, San Francisco Ballet, Stuttgart Ballet, Berlin Ballet. And they will be doing, it's sort of a sampler of a whole bunch of different short ballet pieces throughout the evening, and with some of the best ballet dancers in the world on one stage one night. This is really the only place where you can see these different ballet stars from all over the world dancing together on one stage and one night. And it's the Evening with the Stars, Indianapolis City Ballet. The general sale tickets and patron tickets are on sale now for the November 12th show.
Fantastic. Something a little more immediate today from noon till 10 p.m. at St. Joan of Arc Church at 42nd and Central Avenue. The French Market, the annual French Market. You can take a trip to France without leaving
Bonjour.
Central Indiana.
you
where did you have that beret? You were hiding that from me. plenty of French food and wine if you're old enough. It's also a marketplace. You get a little taste of Europe, and you can hear some French music. And if you get there by 5:30, you can attend Mass in French as well. So you can just show up. That's always a lovely event. And again, just pace yourself. If you're going to the Penrod Arts Fair and French Market, you're going to need a lot of energy.
Well, coming up very soon, down in Bloomington, Indiana, it's the annual, 23rd annual, in fact, Lotus World Music and Arts Festival. This year, they have more than 30 artists representing 20 countries from Argentina to Zimbabwe. You see what I did there?
A to Z.
A to Z, that's
very
right.
Clever.
Very cool stuff. There's a lot of great things that are going to be going on during the time from the 15th through the 18th, including the 1 Million Stars to End Violence, their first ever food truck village curated by the James Beard nominee, Chef David Talent. There's an arts village and so much more. Lotus in the Parks. Check out the Lotus website. That's lotusfest.org for the complete schedule. It's always an amazing event down in Bloomington. Coming up very soon.
Fantastic. Well, in a few minutes, you're going to hear about Indie Irish Fest, which is coming up next weekend. But also, don't forget, next weekend is the beginning of Indie Jazz Fest. This year, celebrating Wes Montgomery, local boy makes good. The event starts with a Get Excited party at Indiana Landmarks Center in Cook Theater on September 15th and continues throughout town with amazing performers, and lots of them, and there's everything from solo performers to full jazz orchestras. If you can't find something you like at indiejazzfest.net, then you don't like jazz. I'm just saying.
There you go. Hey, some other great concerts coming up with the Symphony. The Stella Artois Happy Hour at the Symphony with Time for Three is coming back on Thursday, September 15th at 6:30 at the Hilbert Circle Theater. And Time for Three is going to be doing some really fun music with their newest member, Charles Yang, has joined them. And so Time for Three is going to be kicking off their season and the ISO season with their Throwback Thursday playlist, where they're going to be performing some great classical music standards like Sweet Child of Mine and Bittersweet Symphony and Eleanor Rigby and, you know, the usuals. So doors open at 5. Food and drink will be served from 5 to 6:30, and concert begins at 6:30 at the ISO for Time for Three for the Happy Hour at the Symphony.
Hey, I have a bit of a road trip for you for the weekend of the 24th and the 25th. So Miller Beach, which is on Lake Michigan, it is just next door, slightly east of Gary, Indiana, an easy drive. In 1917, there was a pageant on the beach, which was a large outdoor performance event that galvanized the movement to protect and save the Indiana Dunes. You might say, why were they in danger? Well,
why were they in danger?
Well, there was a lot of drilling. There was a lot of commerce affecting the dunes. And way back, almost a century ago, an effort was started to save the dunes and protect the natural resources. And on the 24th and 25th of this month, there will be a 2016 Dunes Blowout, a festival of performance and ecology. So that's a Saturday and a Sunday. Music, dancing, acting, food, drink. And if you've never been to West Beach and the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore around Miller Beach, Portage, and Gary, you are missing out on one of the spectacular natural resources of our state. So you can learn more about that online. Just Google Dunes Blowout 2016.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Hey, last thing I want to put on the calendar, Sharon, is just a reminder again that the Vonnegut Week, the celebration of Vonnegut's World, this week-long festival is going on, and it concludes on the 16th, 17th and 18th with the world premiere of the opera Happy Birthday Wanda June that the Indianapolis Opera is presenting. It's the last work of Vonnegut, and it will be very, very cool. It's very exciting that they are putting this on here in Indianapolis, and it will just be a great time at the Schrott Center at Butler this weekend, coming up on the 16th, 17th, and 18th with lots of performances of Happy Birthday, Wanda June.
Great way to start September's music. Hey, and don't forget you can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. You can also listen to our program next week for our calendar that we call What Will We Do Without Me?
What will Sharon do?
That's right.
What will you do?
Tune in to find out
what Sharon does. See you next week.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Certain chilled adult beverages have always been on tap at our city's annual Irish Fest, but this year the festival itself is legal. Yes, Irish Fest is toasting 21 years. And Sharon Gamble invited the festival's volunteer marketing guru, Aaron O'Rourke, to tell us about sheep herding, kilts, and some fantastic dance music.
Aaron, I have the feeling that it was sort of fate that you'd become involved in Irish Fest here.
It was actually a funny story.
With a name like Aaron O'Rourke, you were sort of visible to start with. But how'd you get involved? Who recruited you?
I actually used to work for the Indianapolis Children's Choir, and they performed one year at the festival. So I had met the previous chair, Terry,
Terry Sweeney.
Long time. Exactly. Yeah. And after I met him, he said, oh, I think you'd be perfect for running our kids area. So that was about 6 years ago, and I've been involved with the fest ever since, but now have moved on to doing more social media, marketing, that kind of thing.
Awesome. Tell us about your own Irish identity. Have you checked into your heritage, or did someone in your family check into your family tree?
Both sides have sort of checked into. So my mom and my dad both are of Irish descent. So my mom's family is from the southern part of the country, and then my dad's family is just south of Northern Ireland. So both sides have sort of researched the heritage and history, and that was always a big part of my, you know, childhood growing up, was celebrating and acknowledging where my ancestors came from. So I thought this would be perfect to get involved with this festival, kind of add to that cultural framework of Indianapolis as well.
Absolutely. Remind us, I know Irish Fest has been going on a long time. What year is this?
21. We are legal. Yes, we're legal this year. We're very excited about that.
And in broad strokes, so a lot of people maybe are familiar with the idea that there was a neighborhood that for a long time was called Irish Hill. Mm-hmm. We have a decent size Irish or Irish heritage community, right?
Yes, it's the second largest in the state of Indiana.
After South Bend? No.
Maybe. I'm not sure on that one. Okay. So, but yes, it's definitely one of the larger cultural groups in the city. And I think the festival is a great way that we've sort of acknowledged that history of the city. And then, you know, there's just a lot of people, I think, in the United States in general that have Irish backgrounds and ancestors, so we are just glad to kind of add to that celebration of the culture.
I had a professor named Edward Shaughnessy, obviously Irish, going on there, who used to joke that on St. Patrick's Day all the real Irishmen stayed home. However, Irish Fest, everybody's Irish when you come to Irish Fest,
they
right?
Everyone is Irish when they come to the festival. We do. It is sort of for the general patron that maybe is just looking for a great live music outdoor festival where they are, you know, adult beverages, Irish beer and that kind of thing. But it's also for people that are looking maybe to learn more or interested in. We have sheep herding demos. There's quite a few shopping vendors. We have cultural presentations, you know, including dance and instrumental demos. So I think there's a lot of ways for people to experience it just kind of at the very basic level. If you're kind of looking for an outdoor concert, to people that are maybe wanting to learn just a little bit more about the Irish and the history of the culture.
I want you to tell us, because this is how you kind of came into the festival, tell us about the kids' activities.
That was one of the things I think that was very important for the festival. You know, it runs 3 days, so we kick off on Friday and then run through all of Sunday. So we really wanted to make sure that anybody from young to old would have a great experience at the festival, and making sure that families too could enjoy. So we've had a stage where Silly Safari's been. We've done...
Oh, wait. We should probably explain what that is in case somebody's like, what is that?
Silly Safari is a group that will bring animals on site with a trainer or whatever you want to refer to them as. And the kids then are able to learn about the animals, touch, pet, and learn more just kind of about, you know, all of that. So they've been a great partner for us to have family activities. We have games that we play. There's been inflatables. So we've changed it up, and we're looking to do some new things for this year too. But we just wanted to make sure that there was an area for families with little kids to kind of enjoy their own little area at the festival.
Now, folks might want to get a babysitter on the night before the festival starts, right?
So Thursday night we do a concert pub preview night, if you'd like to call it that. It's Celtic Rock. We have two groups coming in. Whiskey of the Damned is from Milwaukee. We've not had them prior to this year, so we're excited, but we have seen them at other festivals. And the Fighting Jamesons are actually a big fan favorite. They will perform at local Irish pubs, including Nine Irish Brothers. So we're glad to have them back. And admission this year is going to be free, so anyone can just kind of walk in, enjoy. We'll have a craft beer tasting and then some food on site for kind of people just to preview the festival. None of the shops or anything will be open yet, but it's a good way to kind of kick off the weekend.
Scope it out.
Yeah.
For somebody who's like, I think I have an idea what Celtic Rock is, can you tell us a little more? What is Celtic Rock?
Yeah, so the more traditional bands are going to skew towards fiddle, violin, tin whistle, guitar, that kind of group, where Celtic Rock is going to be a lot louder, electric guitars, that kind of thing. So it's going to be a little bit more rowdy, I think, than some of the rest of the festival. So it should be a good time.
So if you like, name a mainstream rock band that you would
ever,
say.
Like
let's do the Amazon.com thing. Right. People who like this also like.
If you've ever heard of Flogging Molly or Dropkick Murphys, you would enjoy Thursday night for sure.
There we go. Awesome. Awesome. Now, tell us about, because sometimes people think Irish food and draw a blank. Tell us about some of the food offerings.
So we'll definitely have Clada Irish pubs on site. So they'll do the more traditional fish and chips, corned beef, shepherd's pie, that kind of thing. And then we have we know that not everyone is going to enjoy those types of food, mm-hmm. even though they are delicious. so we do try to have a barbecue place. Punch Burger is going to be on site, which is new this year. So our food vendors have sort of a set menu, but then they usually try to do one or two things that are Irish themed. So usually corned beef is involved. So it's a great way for people to be able to experience some Irish food. But then if they are like, not my thing, we do have other things on site for them to try and eat while they're there.
Now, if you're dining, you need to wash it down with something.
Yes, you do.
And I think there might be a traditional beverage, maybe some Irish style beer.
Yes, we have the full lineup pretty much of the Irish beverages. So Guinness, Harps, Smittix, Magner Cider is the official cider of the festival.
Love that.
Then we also like to acknowledge that the local bar pub component is very also important in Irish culture. So we have on site with us New Day Meadery, who will be doing their meads for us, and also presentations on the history of mead. And we'll also this year, we're excited to have Sun King Brewing is going to be on site as the official craft beer of the festival. They're going to be pouring their Osiris. So if people are looking for a little hoppier option, mm-hmm. As well as their seasonal Ring of Dingle, which they put out in February and March to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. So they are actually brewing that special for us for that weekend.
And what style is that?
It's an Irish stout. So similar to Guinness, but we wanted to have the local option as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. There's an anniversary, the 100th anniversary of the Easter Rising in Dublin. Tell us about that, because it'll be referenced at this year's Irish Fest remembered.
So we've got some performers this year, Tom Sweeney and then Evans and Doherty, who have put together a program that just talks about celebrating the Irish independence and becoming their own country. And so they'll be doing presentations on that. We'll probably have some things on the cultural stage that will be acknowledging that, and then some just general signage scattered around the festival talking about the different men that were involved in that uprising, and then just historical facts for people to kind of learn a little bit more about why that's been important to the country, and subsequently, you know, how that's impacted a lot of things after that. So
sure, and that's kind of important, not to take away from the ability to go and hear great music and
right.
eat and drink and dance and watch dance, but it's also a chance to learn more about both the Irish in Indianapolis and Irish, the world of Ireland in general.
Exactly, and that's why I feel like we've, you know, the festival is completely volunteer run, so no one really gets paid to do what they're doing. But I think that it's been very important for the committee at large to be able to offer this as, you know, a way to experience educational, not educational things for people to just learn more about the Irish culture and how that kind of fits into the rest of, you know, the world, United States, all of that. So mm-hmm. definitely.
How many people dress in traditional style at Irish Fest? What percent?
We actually have quite a few. Kilts are very popular. We actually have a couple shopping vendors that you can buy them on site. So mm-hmm. if you're interested in purchasing one, you'd be able to do that weekend. I don't know, maybe a fourth of the people dress up.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. When you walk around and see, there's people that kind of just really get into the whole atmosphere of the weekend. So whether it's Irish or Ireland t-shirts or whatever else, but there are quite a few people that end up wearing kilts as well, which is very fun for us to see people getting into the festive spirit.
Keeping in mind that we might have people with children nearby as I ask this, what does a real Irishman wear under his kilt?
Nothing.
That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the sheep herding.
It's actually so fun to watch. Jim Bob comes on site for the entire weekend and does demos throughout the weekend. He uses ducks. He's used goats, actual sheep, and then there's been dogs on site too. So he has an area that's roped off that just shows people, you know, because sheep are they're everywhere in Ireland. So this is kind of a fun way for us to acknowledge that part of it.
Sure.
And for people to see something maybe probably that they've never seen before. The goats were getting out last year, too, which was really funny. They started scattering around the park, so people were having to catch them. So it could also be interactive, depending on what animals
okay.
he brings this year.
So, all right. So make sure you eat and drink so that you have the stamina
yes.
to go chase down the
exactly.
goats. Now, go back to the ducks for a second. Mm-hmm. Herding ducks, is that something
yeah,
you can do?
I every time I walk by, he's always trying to, like, maneuver the animals around. So he somehow has managed to train all those different animals to kind of going at his beck and command. So it's very, very fun to watch.
What's your favorite part of Irish Fest?
I think just being able to see all different age groups enjoy and celebrate together. And it's so rewarding for us as a committee to know that we put this on and, you know, we're adding to just all the cultural things that you can do in Indianapolis, to know that we're a volunteer-run festival and we've managed to make this last for 21 years, and to celebrate and just to be on site outside and see everyone enjoying themselves while the music is playing and the sun is setting. There's just nothing better.
Sharon Gamble with the Indy Irish Fest Marketing Director, Aaron O'Rourke. Irish Fest is September 16th through the 18th at Military Park in downtown Indianapolis. You can learn more about all of the events, ticket packages, and that Thursday night preview at IndyIrishFest.com. Again, IndyIrishFest.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I get to interview Travis for his last Art of the Matter.
But I'm not quite done yet. My last interview, I'll get to chat with David Brenneman, the new director of the IU Eskenazi Museum of Art in Bloomington.
And I'll get a preview of Theater on the Square's upcoming season, and we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.